What comes to a man now for all of his strife? While under the sun he gives heart to his life, his days filled with sadness, his work full of grief, and vainly at night may his heart get relief. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, that was, from verses 22 and 23 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Little children, our daily scripture for today from the Word Green Version of 2020. I burned my finger today, but I did something which was, if it's successful, it was very good to have it done, if it works, which was solder a pipe, a valve, into the pipe. I soldered a valve in, and it's the first time I've ever done plumbing like that with the solder. But I didn't burn myself till after I was finished, and then I touched something hot. Of course, that's what you do when you don't know what to do. You think you're successful, you're wondering if you're successful, you're a little bit in panic mode, and you're a little bit lacking humility. I was lacking humility, but the burn humbled me pretty quickly, and I didn't run upstairs quick enough, so I have to keep cold. I mean, I didn't have ice downstairs where I was working to put ice immediately on it, but it's going to be a big white spot on my, a big white blister on my, on the tip of my index finger, the finger I always use for controlling the camera settings on the iPhone. So I'm using my right hand now, but no, it's a good thing I use my left hand for doing all kinds of testing. I don't damage my right hand that way. Since my right hand is my primary hand, I always use my left hand for everything. Sorry about this, the ice. This is the ice. I'm holding it in my hand, and I'm accidentally putting it in front of the camera. So, in our study yesterday, we left off with Kang Ji, the picture with the double eyes. And I only have one hand today, so I'll be trying to do things as best I can here with one hand. Won't be easy, I don't think. There he is. Now, Chinese culture bears many kinds of relation to the Bible. The Chinese symbol for boat, Chuan, consists of a boat, which is a certain symbol. That's the left-hand symbol there as part of the Chinese word Chuan. On the left is the symbol for boat, and the number 8, and that is a different symbol, which is indicated as a slightly different symbol in the upper right in the character written as the Chinese word Xuan, and then in the lower right is the Chinese symbol for mouth, which is sort of a rectangle or a square shape. And a mouth means a person, as the 8 people on Noah's Ark, 8 mouths and the boat, right? All together in one character. So even the Chinese symbol for boat includes the idea of 8 people on a boat, which would indicate Noah's Ark. From this, it appears that a study of the Chinese language and its origins is a significant way to trace the history! Exclamation point. Isn't that remarkable? Even the Chinese language preserves the flood story, the biblical story of Noah's Ark. Other examples are presented elsewhere, one being the word for righteousness in Chinese. Okay, let's look at that magnified. Gotta come closer. Magnify it there. It's this symbol in the middle of the bottom of your screen, being composed of a sheep, which is in the upper part of that character. It looks like that. Sort of like a branch of a, you know, or a tree, or a, sort of a branch of a tree, or something with horns at the top. So it's a sheep. The hand is another part of this symbol, which also seems to be part of the symbol for sheep, actually. But the hand symbol is more like a tree without the horns at the top. And a spear is a that symbol at the bottom right. So the tree is in the lower left, actually, of the symbol for the word righteousness in Chinese. The top of it is sheep. The lower left is the word for hand, and the lower right is the spear symbol. So that's what you see there. Righteous Abel was a herder of sheep, you see? So the herder is the hand part. The righteousness is the overall meaning with the word sheep, the word hand, and the word spear. And he gave some of his sheep as a fatty offering. Abel gave some of his sheep as a fatty offering to God. I'm a little bit fatigued right now. I want to say, those boots that I bought, they're the best boots I've ever owned. And I don't worry about getting them harmed or dirty because they're only... I don't even want to keep repeating, but they're only about $70 Canadian for these boots, which are the best boots I've ever owned. And here I am. If I did ruin the boots, I just could buy another pair, and they fit better. They're easier to get on and off. They're just better boots than I've ever owned for working. Well, that's right. They're only a work boot. I wouldn't wear them for hiking or anything, but they're the best work boots I've ever owned. And so it's the best thing to have. I don't have to wear my $300 boots when I'm working and then have to worry about, you know, what happens to them or whatever. I really like that. I really, really appreciate. But it's just, it's eye-opening. It shows that research is so important because you can find something if you do the searching. That's the thing. Now, righteous Abel gave some of his sheep as a fatty offering to God. Now, the spear would indicate the offering, right? The fact that he killed the sheep. And that he was a shepherd. That's the hand part, maybe. He's a herder of sheep. Or he gave with his hand. It's like an offering, right? And the sheep is what he gave. So that symbol for righteousness also records the story of righteous Abel. Isn't that incredible also? And isn't that marvelous to see that in the Chinese language? The Miao tribes from China, Miao tribes, carry an oral tradition which resembles greatly the Bible's flood record and description of the confusion of languages known as the Tower of Babel. The three august ones of Chinese culture and or myth are a reminder of the three sons of Noah, while disguised by the inclusion of anybody from Nua to the Yellow Emperor. The three august ones were demigods who lived long lives. Now, why was that disguised by the inclusion of anybody from Nua to the Yellow Emperor? Well, they were disguised by the inclusion of anybody from Nua to the Yellow Emperor, I suppose. It's hard to say what that statement means that I made there, but it's certainly worth considering as food for thought. And the three august ones were demigods who lived long lives. The five emperors might have at one time been generations from Nua to Yandi. Yandi's the Yellow Emperor, isn't he? No, Yandi's is the Flame Emperor, isn't he? Let's see. Who's Yandi? Let's find out. Here he is. Here we go. Yeah, Yandi is Shennong, or the Flame Emperor. And the Yellow Emperor is Huang Di, or Gongsun Xuanyuan, or Eber, as we are calling him, a descendant of Shem, in any case, is what we're calling him. And now Yeah. But now remember, these things remember or remind us of later emperors. The five emperors might at one time have been these generations from Nua to Yandi, which Nua is Noah, and then there's 1, 2, 3, 4. So five generations inclusive to Yandi, including Noah and including Yandi. But these five emperors, as they're called in Chinese tradition, five emperors might now be reminders of later emperors, actually. Noah is the father of mankind in the Bible, but Nua, as creator of humans, the creator of humans, in Chinese mythology. So Nua, this female person in Chinese mythology, is the creator of all humans, right? So, and she's a woman, so she could obviously signify Noah's wife, couldn't she? But, of course, she wasn't married to Cainan, so, at least not as far as we know from the Bible, that doesn't fit. So there are things that are confused in the Chinese mythology, but that thought had actually never occurred to me before, that Nua could be Noah's wife. It's a great idea. Imagine if that were her name, too, if she had a similar name to Noah. But that has never occurred to me, or I don't think anyone else, up till now. Not that I've seen. But remember the table above showing how the worldwide deluge myths represent only part of the story given in the Bible? Well, the table, right. Right, right, up above at the very top of the article where it showed the worldwide myths from all around the world, which showed that this was a common story around the world about the worldwide flood, but it wasn't always said to be necessarily universal or worldwide, not in every case, and it wasn't always the same as the Bible account in all other respects either. It had some significant similarities, especially in the fact there was an ark provided for the saving of human people, and that humans were saved, and there was a destruction by water. Those are the most common elements. It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? The story that we're covering here in this article, the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, and we're finished today's study in that article. And maybe we'll have time and I'll talk about some of the things I've been doing. I don't know whether, hopefully I soldered the valve and it worked, I think. It did stop some of the water, but whether it will hold up under pressure, the soldering, and whether I damaged the valve by heating it up too much, that needs to be yet determined by putting it under pressure and maybe getting the hot water tank in service. That might be what I do. But I had another job. I had to repair the threads on the hot water tank, because when the water drips down in the hot water tank from upstairs, when the tank's not full, for some reason it ran along the top of the tank and then ran down the inside of the tank right to the place where the open hole was, where the heating element would be screwed in normally, but which had been removed by me. And that water then got on the threads of the heating element hole and damaged them with rust just by doing some dripping there for like a day or two or however long it was. And I got flooding on the floor in the basement because it spilled out that hole after it filled up. But I was just running water in the sink to fill up, because I've installed a new faucet valve so that I don't have to keep opening and closing the kitchen faucet. I've got a new valve system that I installed so I could fill my water filter up here so I can make my preparation for distilling the water. And that's where I got the flood happening, because the cold water trickles across into the hot water pipe through the open kitchen faucet, as well as other faucets in the house. And then it gets down into the hot water tank because the valve was not on the tank. There was no valve on the tank. So I needed to put a valve in to block that, and that's what I did today. Then when I ran the water again, I didn't get any water running down. And I noticed that before the valve was even put in, there was water, and I had got the threads wet again on that hole. I know I stopped that part, but whether it works under pressure is what I need to test. So we're up to 15 minutes. We've got lots of time left here. The deluge myths. The Bible is different from other things because the Bible is not a myth. That's the difference. It's been tested so many ways and tried and proven by so many things. And it's proven by the myths, the fact that there are other myths that confirm that the Bible must be true, because there wouldn't be so many other myths that correspond to the same story told by the Bible in all these different cultures. It's just so interesting, because why would a myth ever confirm something that's true, right? It seems a bit paradoxical at the same time. But if it weren't for all these myths, it would be very difficult to substantiate the Bible, the account of the deluge, other than the fact that we found Noah's Ark, of course. There are many ways to verify a story like the Bible. And the story of Noah's Ark is not the only story in the Bible that we could research. It's a remarkable, remarkable thing that the only book in the world that tells the truth about all these different things, so many different things, is the Bible. And they're finding, well, years ago they said David was a fictional character until they suddenly found inscriptions that actually quoted David's name, saying the house of David and things like that. So, I mean, yeah, the Bible's been proven true a remarkably large number of ways, phenomenally large number of ways. So let's see if we can continue our study. I mean, our watching of the Thor Heyerdahl video, the raw expeditions from 1972. And before we start, I need to confirm just briefly what version we're on here. Part 5 we did yesterday, I think. So we're on part 6. So part 5 would be 25 minutes. So we're on 25 minutes for part 6. That's where we would be, 25. Right about there. Okay.
The three shipwrights from Chad used the techniques they employed at home, at the same time simple and sophisticated. Their method is to squeeze the porous ends of the papyrus together to make them watertight, and to keep them so by wedging the reeds in under one another like a seabird's feathers. Each bundle is then bound firm with rope. Many bundles are afterwards lashed together. They tie only three large bundles when they are battered by a sandstorm from the Sahara. The sand-filled wind stabs against the tent, ripping away the lighter reeds from the unfinished stern and drying up the papyrus that has been so laboriously soaked. The boat is in danger of becoming airborne before it ever reaches the sea. They act quickly to protect what they have made from blowing away. After 3 days of storm, The papyrus reeds are so dry and brittle, they break at the touch. A disturbing state of affairs for material that is meant to carry 7 men across an ocean. The reeds must be watered once again, this time from hand-carried jars, before the work can resume. So far, the boat has been lying on its side. The workers roll it upright. The first from many curious tourists begin turning up.
So far, everything had gone according to plan, exactly as at home in Chad, and strictly according to the ancient illustrations in the burial chambers around us. But our boat builders from Chad wanted to slice off the stern just the way they did at home. They said that no boat had bows at both ends. All my attempts at getting them to build a raised stern in the manner of the ancient Egyptians were utterly fruitless. I also called on Egypt's foremost expert on ancient boat types, Ahmed Joseph, who was in the process of reconstructing Pharaoh Cheops' wooden ship at the foot of the Great Pyramid, but neither he nor Landström were able to persuade Abdullah. Our two academicians tried to teach our friends from Chad how the stern should be built, but Abdullah insisted that one could begin a papyrus reed forward and add more and more toward the rear, but one could not thin them out again so as to make them come to a point at the stern. After 2 days of discussion and a gift of a watch to each of them, our friends finally allowed themselves to be persuaded. Landström was completely exhausted when our boat builders finally agreed to try to make a boat that curved upward to a point in the stern as well.
Through lack of experience, the shipwrights provide a pitifully weak and thin rear end for an ocean-going ship. As supervised by the two learned consultants, the boat nevertheless receives the shape of its ancient prototypes. And Abdullah has not only curved the bow and stern upward to withstand the waves, but in order to match the ancient design, and for reasons unknown to Abdullah and Heyerdahl, he must also curve it inward like a scorpion's tail. It wasn't long before the local guides added a new attraction to their tours.
Okay. That's the end of today's portion of the Ra or Re expeditions of Thor Heyerdahl, the transatlantic crossing using an ancient papyrus boat that was undertaken by the Norwegian explorer, I guess you could call him, or what else could we call Thor Heyerdahl? A pioneer, I guess. Norwegian adventurer is certainly would be a good description of him, and his men that went with him were, I believe, not the same men that went with him on the Kon-Tiki expeditions from 1947. And this man is he passed away. Well, by the way, Ron Wyatt passed away in 1999. That was what I found out after I wasn't sure about 1984 and 1985, but he was still going strong in around that time period of 84, 85. But as far as Thor Heyerdahl, I think maybe we've got him here. Where is he? If we got him here? Let's use this one. Let's see, Heyerdahl. Thor Heyerdahl. I think he died in 2009, I would guess, or something like that, but 2002, is it? Yeah, 2002. He died in 2002. Born in 1914. And died at the age of 87, it says here. So there's Thor Heyerdahl. And so he was very active for quite a few years on these adventures. And now we have got lots of time left. I've got some more delivered. I got the leather that I ordered yesterday for... So I can't show it to you because I put it away. I put it away already. My sump pump just made a noise. It tells me it's working. I've got this leather that I ordered. Oh, I can show you. I can show you what I can show you is the picture of it, I guess. I bought this belt leather. I ordered, once I found it, I found this leather. And let's see, two different kinds of belt leather. Let me drag this over here. There's one. So this belt leather was wider, beautiful leather. It's thicker than the leather that I had bought in larger pieces that I used to make my first ever belt. But this is thicker, but it's also 1 3/4 wide, so I can get two belts from it. If I cut it as 1 inch, for example, and a 3/4 inch belt, I might be able to get that from it. Exactly, because when you cut leather, you don't waste any. If you cut it efficiently, you just make one cut and you don't lose any of the width. And this is very good quality leather. So it's, I mean, as I understand it, this is a company, a brand of leather that's very good, very highly rated. Italian leather, I believe also. It's European, it's very high quality. And so and it's 9 or 10 ounce weight. The weight of this, see, that's the thing, is the weight of it. 8 or 9 ounces, I should say. It's 8 or 9. Yeah, well, that's good. It's not 9 or 10. 9 or 10 would be too thick. 8 or 9 ounces, it says 3.2 millimeters. I thought it was 9 or 10. Let's check the other one now. The other one that I was going to show you. Find out what it is. In terms of maybe it's thicker. One of them I thought was 9 or 10. Because that would be almost too thick for a belt. It's getting thick. And it's getting harder to make a belt as it gets thicker. But this other one I bought, it's not the same color as shown here. I thought it was going to be blue, but it's leather, natural leather that's been stained blue. And it's a darker blue than what's shown there, so. And it's 8 or 9 ounces. Right, yeah, I thought that the Italian leather that I ordered was actually significantly thicker. I don't know, maybe I just clicked on a different entry and it was a different thickness. I'm not sure. I thought it was going to be thicker, but I mean, I don't want it any thicker than this. 3.2 milliliters or millimeters, not liters, millimeters here. Yeah, milliliters and millimeters are completely different. Like a cubic centimeter is a milliliter, and a millimeter is a thousandth of a meter. A micrometer, is that how you pronounce it, or is it? Yeah, I think it is. No, it's a micron, usually. It's called a micron. That's a millionth of a meter. A micrometer is a thing you measure with, which measures... I don't think it measures millionths of a meter, but maybe it does, actually, because... Let's see, a millionth of a meter would be... Oh, yeah, maybe it does. It's called a micrometer anyway. The thing, it's a very accurate device that measures. Let me get this darkness. I can't really do it because I'm afraid I don't have my good finger. So I better just leave it alone. But the thickness there, millimeters, is about right for what I had before. What was it, 2.5, did I say? 2.5, I think I had, in the belt that I made, 2.5 millimeters. And every little bit of increase in thickness really makes a good change, or it's a big difference for a belt. So, you know, 3.2 is a lot thicker. And the one that I bought, the one that I had, is 3.5, I think. The other thick, the thick one that I bought, which was, it fits me, and it was only about $20-some. Look at the price. I think I paid, almost $30, but this would be two belts I could get from it, which is a good price probably for the leather. Then I have to provide the buckles. I've got the buckles already. I've got different size buckles, all different, 1 inch, 3/4, and 1 1/4, and I think the one I don't have is, I don't have 1.5, and I don't want something that wide, because it's not as versatile for fitting into all the belt loops of all the pants, you know. And I just, the one that I bought that is very thick, that's, I think, 3.5 millimeters thick, that's natural, one piece of leather, and only about $20 or $25 or something. That is also, what was I going to say? And I forgot. It's not too thick, you know. It's not too expensive. And, it's got the, it's 1.5, I know what I was going to say. I was going to say it's 1.5 inches. Yeah, it's 1.5 inches thick. Wide. It's 1.5 inches wide, as well as being quite thick. But it's 3.5 millimeters thick and 1.5 inches wide. And the 1.5 inches wide works with the work pants that I had, that I just bought. I mean, just bought them recently. But that I had to wash them because they got a very terrible stain on them. And I couldn't get the stain out for the longest time. I was working on that the other day. Oh, I had to wash them 4 times in different ways before I got the stain out. But it was really just a matter of getting the soap and working it in well enough. And I didn't do it well enough the first multiple number of times. It seemed to be, I used bleach, I used all kinds of things, you know, the oxygen bleach and all sorts of different methods. So I've been working a lot on a lot of different things. So the blue belt is same, about the same in that sense, and it's 1 1/5 of an inch wide. So it'll work pretty well for a 1 1/4 inch belt buckle, which I have already. I think I'll use the bronze buckles, or bronze hardware, for this particular belt. So I want to make that belt. It's a good width. You know, I've got one that's, the one that I had that doesn't fit me anymore, that I used a lot with some of my smaller belt loops, was 7/8 of an inch, that belt. And it's just a little bit short, and it ends up being, you know, I have to use the last hole or the last couple of holes. Anyway, that's it for today's study. September 19th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:17 hours, North American Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now. That was The Ark of Urartu, Chapter 2, Paragraph 5.